Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Welcome to Tech Talk. This is Stephen Scott here with you today, and Robin Christofferson is back with us as well from AbilityNet, Head of Digital Inclusion there. Hello.
Hello. I'm so glad to be back. I'm so glad that you haven't got fed up with me yet.
Well, we haven't said anything, but now you mention it. No, of course we're glad to be. Of course we're happy to be here. Look, you're the man who brings the brains. I bring the looks,
not
obviously.
True.
Well, no, I bring the looks. That is true.
Can't comment. I'll take you at your word.
Yeah, you might need to have that one. That's the great thing about being a room full of blind people. You could be the most gorgeous person in the room, and who'd know? There's no issues around beauty in here, for sure.
I'm tempted to ask for listener feedback, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. How do we sound? Do we sound gorgeous? okay, well, let's get into this week's show. We've got lots to talk about because it's National Braille Week. And I'm quite excited to talk about Braille. You know that last year I took the step to learn Braille, Robin. So I am going to talk a bit about my experience with it and some of the technology that I'm getting to use now, which is pretty cool, and getting used to. Slowly, I'll admit, but getting there. I know a few of you have been in touch asking how the Braille's been going. So I want to talk a bit about that and tell you where we are. Also, you have got another one of your wonderful reviews coming up, Robin. You are going to be taming the lion that is Outlook.
Yeah, it's a huge beast. So let's see what we can do with it.
Okay, I'm intrigued by this because we're talking here about sounds, aren't we? So you're quite into your sounds and a lot of the feedback that you get, but not so much with Outlook.
Well, we've applied sounds to all the Office apps in an earlier demo. Now this is all about hotkeys to get around more efficiently and to avoid the ribbon wherever you can in Outlook, guys. Totally. So that you can fly around the different areas and the different sections of Outlook. There is so much to Outlook. So people that need to use it for work, for example, you know, it can take, I mean, it took me years to get to grips with it. So I want to pass on some top tips so that other people can short circuit that process and become more confident with it. It's enormous.
I'm so glad you're doing that because it is such a beast of an app. But at the same token, it is a really good app. It does a lot of great things. And I think it's probably, I mean, it's maybe, I don't know if I'd say it's the most accessible. It probably is. But accessibility in the sense of learning to use rather than the actual program itself having any issues. I think
some of the tweaks, that we're going to cover will mean that it will speak better.
Ah. Oh, well, that's good. Right. Okay. I'm intrigued. And can you get rid of that horrendous save menu as well these days? So you know this, and maybe this isn't an Outlook, obviously. In Word, for example, when you try and save a document,
backstage view.
Yeah. And I spend my life trying to navigate around, and I still don't really know what I'm clicking on. I get lucky, but I want rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, I should probably say, well, it's in my head then, F12 and Control F12 are the open and save as the original dialogues in Outlook now that will avoid the backstage way of doing it. And when you open up Word or Excel and you get that backstage view, if you want to get straight to a document, you can just hit escape to make it go away. So there are ways that you don't have to interact with it. But yeah, that's a bit of a pain sometimes as well.
So remind me, what does F12 and
F12 and Control F12. So F12, and I can't remember the order because it's just muscle memory, but one of them brings up the open dialogue, the classic open dialogue that you always used to get in Word, for example.
Oh, yeah, okay, right.
Yeah, and not the backstage way of doing it.
Tree view and list view.
Yeah, that's right. And Control F12 does the save or save as, depending on whether you've saved it already. So, yeah, that's much easier to do it than interacting with backstage. So, yeah, that could have been a tip in there as well. But, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Interesting. Right, okay. Well, all this is going to be getting talked about on the show. We're going to be talking about Outlook in particular. And I get the feeling there's going to be something coming on Word and other apps soon. If you can work out how to get around OneNote, I will love you forever. No, you might not
want
that.
Which version? That's the challenge because there are so many. But, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the PC, I must say, I am using the PC more. We're going to be talking in a minute about Microsoft and their event, and I have to say I'm quite intrigued by this event because, as you know, in the past few months, I've been really all in on the Mac. And I love the Mac, I really do. And I think for an editor or someone who wants to get into video, even if you're visually impaired, it is a brilliant system. But I've come to the conclusion, I think, it's a forever journey, but I think my conclusion is, and I think we're probably aligned here, that I love the Mac for editing, for video especially, because I'm learning to use iMovie with VoiceOver, and that's good fun, and it is pretty good, and obviously audio editing as well, using the Reaper application on Mac. So I think for creative work, I think that the Mac is incredible. It just does the job really well, and you don't have to buy the latest and greatest to do it. You know, it's a pretty self-sustaining system, within reason. I mean, we're maybe talking in the last 3 years, maybe. If you've got a machine in that range, then you're going to do okay. But for getting things done, like documents, like Outlook, like, you know, essentially the kind of paperwork side of any business you have, I think the PC is the best job. And I have to say, you know, I do think Narrator's come on leaps and bounds. I do think NVDA is good, but nothing quite beats JAWS when you've really got to just sit down and get something written or something done.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of being controversial and kind of simplifying it too much, it's kind of productivity versus creativity.
Yes, exactly. But, that's it.
Which is why I have my trusty VM, my virtual machine running Windows on my Mac, and I could definitely not do without it. So I can really fly around in Office, in Windows, for example, as we will see a little bit later on. But there's stuff that on the Mac that I just absolutely couldn't do without. Quick responding to a text message that's just come in, for example, mm-hmm. or a quick FaceTime call, which is basically using your phone remotely through your PC. So there are so many things that make me, I want to say, productive as well. And that's why it's an oversimplification to, you know, characterize each operating system as one or t'other. But it's the simple truth that Office on the Mac side of things isn't accessible or as accessible yet. Maybe when it becomes so, then that will be more of a choice for people to make. But yeah, I mean, I understand that you, even though you've been immersed in the Mac ecosystem, might be thinking about a new machine that has gone back to the other side.
Yeah, well, this kind of leads us nicely onto the Microsoft thing. I'll be honest, from a personal perspective, I love the way you work, because I think having both is perfect, right? I mean, that's our world. I mean, I live in a world where I make audio, I now do video stuff, I'm doing other bits and bobs, a lot of creative stuff. And I think that's a really, it is a simplification, but I think it's brilliant, actually, the way you describe that. Creativity and productivity, two separate things. Who are you as a person? If you're making a decision right now to buy a new computer, and you're hearing of all these events that we've been talking about. We've had the Mac event recently. We've got another Apple event due soon, which is going to be focused on the MacBook, potentially, a new one of those, and some other new iPads. Then you're going to be looking at all this saying, well, what do I buy? What do I actually go out and get? What works? I think, honestly, if you've got the money and you can afford it, then get yourself a MacBook, because truthfully, you'll be able to have both. You can have Windows the Mac side on there. But just to be very clear about this, because I know many people, I know I was confused at the beginning when people talked about VMs and all the rest, and I was like, what is this? We essentially have, so you buy a MacBook, right? You've got your MacBook, fine, just that's your standard everyday garden variety MacBook. But then you add a piece of software onto it. There are various ones, VMware. Mm-hmm. There is Parallels. I know you, mm-hmm. you tend to stick with, what is it, Parallels you use? Parallels?
No, I use VMware, but both are accessible.
Both are accessible? Mm-hmm. Right, well, that's good to know. Because, you know, obviously that program needs to be accessible. But then what you do is on the program, Parallels or VMware, you actually install Windows. So you almost install it like it's you know, like an application on your Mac.
Absolutely it is. And yeah, there are other free ones. There's one called VMBox, which isn't accessible. So beware, you do really have to spend some money. The huge caveat about the machine is that it needs to be really beefy, because as soon as that program is open, so yeah, it's a program like any other program, as soon as it's open and Windows has popped up out of hibernation, it instantly halves the power of your PC. Everything, I mean, of your Mac, everything will slow down accordingly, because it basically shares the cores. It divides them in two of your processor. So with that, having said that, it's, you know, just like any other application, you can alt command tab to it. When it has focus, all of your Windows keystrokes work. The VM itself doesn't grab any keystrokes other than very few core Mac OS keystrokes. So you can just drive your Windows programs, you know, you're on the desktop, you open up Outlook or Word or whatever it might be, and all of those are there, and Alt-Tab will move you between those, and Command-Tab will move you out of your VM and tab you through other Mac programs. It's super sweet, but complicated. And
well, it sounds complicated, yeah.
It can be, to get your head around it. You can actually go even further, and each program that you open in your Windows, in your virtual Windows machine, can be opened as a separate Mac app window as well. So that's when it can get really complicated, but I like to keep them all in one place under a single Mac application. It's got the title of Windows 10, and it's just, you know, easy to tab away out of, and when you're in it, it's just like you're working in Windows.
What I did when I set mine up a long time ago, and I didn't use it as much because I had issues with the computer itself. It wasn't powerful enough, as you were saying. And what I did was, I, in order to maybe not confuse myself so much, I actually had two keyboards connected to my computer at all times. So I had my Mac keyboard, which I would always use, obviously, on the Mac side. But then I just had like a standard Dell keyboard that was plugged in, and that was my Windows keyboard. And I always then didn't get mixed up, because one of the things,
you can,
of course,
absolutely do that. Yeah,
because that's one of the challenges, isn't it? Trying to remember where the keys are, and you get so familiar with obviously using one system, trying to use the other, it confuses you. So if you can physically change that, that's,
you've got two screen readers on the go, and you've got two sets of keystrokes. Absolutely. So in the VM, you can say, "I want it to use this keyboard instead,"
and I want it to use this microphone.
Or,
you can use JAWS, which is brilliant. So obviously JAWS, because when you separate,
you've got to have
over,
something.
Well, that's right. But you know, it's not going to take VoiceOver with it. VoiceOver kind of leaves you at the door and says, "All yours," and then, you know, hands you off to JAWS, and it will speak away merrily. And it beautifully jumps between them. It is a really nice system. But for me, I am thinking of joining the dark side again. Although the more I talk to you about the VM side, I tend to think, best of both worlds, one machine. I love it. Because I don't really want to have to cart around two machines with me if I can avoid it. So that might be the solution. But I don't know. It's just, it's such a difficult decision to make.
So tomorrow, work are handing out MacBooks, MacBook upgrades to everyone. So I'll be getting a new MacBook in perfect timing, because obviously later this month,
new one's coming,
they're going to be announcing new ones. So yeah, thanks work.
Could have waited a couple of months. Yeah, I know. Well, you can let us know how that goes. And let's talk about Microsoft, though, because, you know, for most people who are not in the position we're in, who would need this kind of level of power, I don't even know if the Surface Pro lineup or the Surface lineup itself would even be of interest to many people, if I'm honest. There's so many other options out there. But let's talk about it anyway. I'll be honest, this is an interesting one for me, because normally when a tech event comes along, I get very excited and I jump up and down and get my popcorn. And I did enjoy the event, but I feel I'm a bit concerned about the direction of travel for Microsoft in terms of the new computers they've brought out. So my initial concern has always been around new PCs, touchscreens. There seems to be a push towards all of these computers having touchscreens. And I know that Freedom Scientific, the Vispero Group, are working very hard to make sure JAWS works screen reader works with Windows, I should say, and in particular touchscreens. And I know in the upcoming 2020 update of JAWS next year, and the beta of that, I think the public beta is coming out soon, but the beta that's out already for testing, will have a number of new features to support that. I think a new touch cursor will be coming as well. So you'll be able to use JAWS even with the screen, you know, touching.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not overly keen on this, if I'm honest, but that's maybe just me. I prefer a physical keyboard. So maybe let's talk about the lineup, because you know, let's be clear on all of this. So what they launched, well, of course, the Surface Pro, which is what I call the tablet that can break it at a given moment, because of the way it is built, because it's got this, so it's a tablet which has got a little kickstand at the back. You pull this little kickstand out and then you stand it up, and that's great, unless of course you do what I did once with a tablet. The first day I was actually trying one out, I actually pulled, you know, brought it up like a laptop lid, let go of it, and it right onto the desk, and the guy in the shop I was in didn't seem too impressed by that. So yeah, it's got this little kickstand, it's got a folding keyboard, but the keyboard attaches magnetically. And that's the Surface Pro. We're on to Surface Pro 7. And it's got all the bells and whistles. I mean, we could sit here and talk about specs day and night, but Robin, let's be honest about it. It's going to be another beefy machine. Maximum processor speed is up past the Intel Core i7 processor range, and that's as high as it goes. But it's certainly for, you know, for that productivity category, for people who are looking to do documents and work, it is the machine to get, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the one major difference, or several major differences, to be honest, between that and, for example, an iPad, is that because it's full Windows on an Intel processor, you will maybe get onto Windows on ARM a little bit later on, but Intel is not a mobile first chip, so it hasn't got the instant on that you've got on iPad OS, for example, or on your phone. So to come out of hibernation does take a little bit of time. Battery life is nowhere near that of an iPad, for example. So yeah, and you don't automatically get always, you know, really good cellular data management as well. So if you're used to an iPad or a phone where it's a mobile first architecture, etc., then that they're working towards that. But Intel historically have been really poor in the kind of cellular mobile first silicon area. So yeah, it won't feel, whilst it kind of form factor wise is similar to an iPad, a bit thicker, a bit chunkier, longer, very different aspect ratio. It won't feel like a mobile operating system, but it will run all of your desktop apps because it's a full desktop just in a tablet form.
So, I mean, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about the Surface lineup because there's not a lot to say from our perspective. I mean, you can listen to podcast after podcast and read blog after blog on specs. I'm not going to do all that here. I just bore people to tears. I think that the range is, you know, what it is. You've got the Surface Book, which is essentially the laptop, isn't it? That is the...
Surface Book is it's like a laptop, you're absolutely right, and it's got these weird kind of grabby kind of clothespin hand hinge that can grab the lid and make it into a laptop, fold it up and down into a clamshell. But you can press a button and those kind of spread apart and you can take off the lid, and that becomes then like a Surface tablet. So it's kind of a two-in-one, but it's got an actual detachable screen.
Yes, because I get this mixed up. The Surface Laptop,
yeah,
is the
that
laptop,
came out
isn't it?
Relatively recently. So we're up to number four of that one, and that's basically just a laptop. It's got the Surface name, but it's not Surface in any other way. It's a laptop. The screen has a touch screen, but it's not detachable.
13.3 and 15-inch sizes.
Yeah, and I would want to say, because I went to the opening launch of the new Oxford Circus Microsoft store recently, and it was the one and only time that I'd ever got my hands on some Surface hardware, and it's gorgeous. It's really, really nice. They feel really, really nice. So we're talking about products that they are pitching as, you know, examples of what you can do when you do hardware really well. So, and they're not as expensive as Apple hardware, but they're definitely premium hardware. So,
well,
yeah,
I don't know. I was specking up. The top end one of the Surface Pro was taking me past 2,000. And the same, I mean, I was going for top spec, just sort of pitching top spec at it. Mm-hmm. And you were looking at, you know, upwards, I think for the Surface laptop, you were up by maybe 1900. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, they are pitching high along with the other guys.
They
You know,
they wanted to feel like a premium product, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because I've been looking at the Dell XPS range recently for my own interests. And I was thinking, you know, if I'm going to buy one, I hear so much good stuff about Dell, and I like the work they've done in the past. The one thing they seem to be brilliant at is making monitors and all that kind of thing. So, and they've always been good at hardware. Laptops have always been the, you know, when I got a job, I always got a Dell laptop and it was always good and I always enjoyed it. But I hear some mixed reports around the quality, the actual build quality of those machines, and I that's why I'm quite interested. I'm holding off because I'd quite like to see what these new ones are like. And if they've got the power to them, then great. And they do. You know, you're never going to go wrong with a Microsoft Surface product. I don't think there's many people, unless you're planning to, you know, refilm and recreate Toy Story 4 on one of these in an editing sequence, I don't think you'll have much of a problem. General day-to-day use, you know, emails, Word, you know, browsing the web, using, you know, maybe playing the odd game or whatever, the Surface is more than enough, no matter which one you choose. It's not so much about the reason for the different versions is ultimately down to what your use case will be. But it is interesting to note that the number of Surface Pros, this was a little straw poll someone did. I saw this on Twitter a couple of weeks back. Someone did a straw poll. They spend a lot of time travelling up and down the country on the West Coast Main Line. And they said from Glasgow to London and London back, this person had seen a radical shift away from MacBooks on every table to Surface Pros. People seem to be using these devices. Business seem to be liking them. They seem to be solid machines. And, of course, because they're made by Microsoft, I think that adds a lot to it as well. So, you know, a hardware, software build, which is what Apple's, you know, unique selling point was for a long time.
Yeah, and there's no doubt in recent years the MacBooks have come into under a lot of fire for their keyboard. Problems,
terrible
which
keyboard.
Touch wood, I'm hoping won't manifest itself in my new model. And a number of things they've been holding off updating them because Intel, with their Coffee Lake to Skylake transition, etc., has been very slow in shrinking the die down to a 10 nanometer. So there've been lots of reasons why Apple hardware in the laptop side of things has been less and less attractive recently.
Yeah, well, they're pushing the iPad Pros, and I think that you can see that's where the direction of travel's going, that unification of iPad and MacBook will suddenly become one device, and then that's, you know, we end up with a Surface Pro with an Apple logo on it. It is essentially, I think, where we end up. But I was interested to hear that they brought out, that Microsoft brought out some other choices this time around, including the Surface Pro X, which is a small 13-inch laptop, although it is more, I'd say it's almost like a Surface Pro Mini, if that's fair, as in it's got the same kind of kickstand approach. It's got the, or it might be folding, I'm not actually too sure if it folds in on itself, but it's got a keyboard and it's got a pen, that's optional. I have to say this, the keyboard, just the keyboard and the pen that you get is £259. If you want that. That's just for the keyboard, guys, so just be aware of that. But if you want, you know, I think it's cheaper if you don't want the pen. We wouldn't, I guess.
So this is a new departure for them because it's running ARM, which is the processor which is in all of your iPhones, for example. Mm. And it has to emulate 64-bit programs. So it can, or is it 32-bit programs? It has to emulate the older programs, which Adobe, all the Adobe suite, haven't been updated to 64-bit. So in emulation, certain programs on this device are going to run a little bit more slowly, but they've been holding off. They had a Windows on ARM tablet a couple of years ago, and it was just super slow to the point where it was unworkable. So
was that Surface RT?
RT. Yeah. And Windows on ARM, which was the flavor of software for it. So this is an updated version of the hardware, and the operating system has been slimmed down a lot as well to make it work better. So I think this is going to be the first viable Windows on ARM tablet, because the one before also didn't run any 32-bit apps. So there was a huge number of very popular applications you couldn't run on that tablet, but it had all of the benefits of what I was talking about earlier: instant on, much better battery life, didn't run so hot, that sort of thing. So I would definitely look at this one, guys, if you are in the market for a Surface and you're not a kind of a power user. You know, you're not going to be using Photoshop all the time. You're going to be doing basic stuff. It's more portable. It's lighter. It'll give you longer battery life. If you can't stomach the price of the keyboard, then just get a Bluetooth. You know, there are loads of third-party really good keyboards that you could use. If you're not interested in the pen, then you don't have to buy one of those. But yeah, definitely look at this one.
What about JAWS? I'm thinking about JAWS on this, and there's been a bit of a conversation between friends of mine around how something like that would run on an ARM processor, because that's not normal, is it?
I'm pretty sure that there's a version that runs on Windows for ARM. And the responsiveness, you know, how well it runs is fine. So you'd have to have a different license, though.
What does that mean?
I don't know, because I haven't tried this new one before. It wasn't good, but nothing ran well on that machine before.
I'd be very hesitant to move to that.
Well, let's see it in action.
Yeah, let someone else buy it.
Yeah, or get someone to demo it on a podcast like this, maybe. I don't know. And we can see how responsive. Let's get feedback. You know, the jury's out, but I'm very interested in that machine as being the way forward. For the last 3 or 4 years, Microsoft have been working very hard to chop away the cruft from Windows. Windows was a great big mess. It was like a kind of a ball of yarn. Everything was tangled together, and there were, you know, it was a real legacy monster, and they've had to really work hard to slim it down so that it can be mobile ready, because they want to move over to the much more mobile first operating systems that you can run on ARM. That's the future, unless Intel do something very significant in this space, which they've not shown any signs of at all. In fact, they got out of the mobile modem space altogether a couple of months ago, so they're never going to make those. So yeah, no,
my concern is, and I'm all for trying new stuff, and you know me, I'll always, you know, stick my hand in my pocket and say, right, let's try this out, but I am wary around this, because this is a kind of line in the sand for us a little bit, where we're moving towards this new kind of architecture. People are buying this stuff maybe on price, not fully understanding the whole ARM thing, and, you know, understanding Intel and what works and what doesn't. And I think that's why, you know, I'd always encourage people, you know, get testing done or wait for reviews. Don't just leap in and buy, because I love the style and the idea of the Surface Pro X, but I'm not overly keen on this idea that it might not work as well
the
with JAWS.
Marks.
I mean, if it doesn't work with it, it's, you know, what's the point, right? So, oh, Narrator works amazing, but I want to use JAWS. So, you know, for us, it's going to still be the Surface Laptop, the Surface Book, or the Surface Pro 7. Of course, there's a whole wide range of other options out there, from Dell and Lenovo and HP and all the rest. So, you know, there are so many options, frankly.
And also, not only does JAWS work snappily enough within the operating system and within beefy programs like Office on that tablet, but what about the 32-bit apps that are in emulation on there?
Yes,
it won't feel any different when you just open them. They'll open fine, but they won't be running natively, so they'll be less responsive, a bit like a VM. In fact, it's exactly the same. They'd be running in a little virtual container, and so you're going to have a performance hit there as well. So make sure you check a 32-bit app with JAWS running and make sure that works okay as well.
Okay. I want to quickly touch on the other two. I'm conscious of time because we've so much else to cram into this episode, but let's mention quickly about the other two, the Neo and the Duo. I have to say, this is when my attention shifted from, oh, look, this is lovely new tech, to, uh-oh, I'll explain why in a minute. But tell us what the Neo and Duo are from Surface Pro lineup.
Yeah, before people get too interested in what we're about to say, next Christmas is when these are going to appear. So it's a bit odd to...
Right, okay.
I mean, they had hardware. It looked like finished hardware, but and it was obviously running something. But why it's going to take quite so long, I think they need to get developers on board for to produce apps in sufficient numbers to make this a viable proposition when it finally comes out. So the Neo... Unlike the Surface Pro X, this runs Windows 10X. So this is a new version of Windows. It's not on ARM. It's on Intel, but it's a super light version. It used to be called Core OS, and this is really slimmed down so that it can run on. It can drive two screens in a really snappy way, and it will have a decent battery life. And so it's basically about 9 inches per screen folded together with a hinge in the middle. So it's not a continual screen like the Galaxy Fold. So you will have that bar down the middle. So it's like a book if you hold it up, about the size of a novel, perhaps, when it's open. Mm. There is a keyboard optional, again, that you can attach. If you were using it in kind of laptop mode, then the bottom screen would give you a soft keyboard on it, a virtual keyboard. So the various modes that you can hold it in, it showed on a video, loads of different ways, including tenting it. So you're looking at one screen and the other screen's kind of folded around the back and you would use an external keyboard that way. So there's loads of ways that you can do it. But yeah, this is running Windows 10 X, unlike the Surface Pro X, which doesn't run Windows 10 X, that'd be far too simple. And they're still working hard on this, and it's not going to run the sort of programs that you've got on your Windows desktop today, hence the delay. So that's that one. That's the...
But that's, and just to be clear, that's going to be running essentially Google Android apps.
No.
That, because that's what I took
that's
from that.
That's the Neo, and it's running this... Yeah, it's going to be running desktop apps, but in this new light version of Windows called Windows 10 X. So the smaller of the two is the Duo, the Surface Duo. So that was the Neo. And the Duo is a 5.5-inch screen, two of those. So a smaller book, a little tiny book, folded again. It's exactly the same form factor. So there's a hinge down the middle, so it's not a continuous screen. So imagine two, the size of two kind of iPhones, you know, hinged down one side, and you can fold those together to hide both screens, or you can fold them around the other way to have both screens, one on each side. And this one runs Android. And he said, Panos Panay, who's the chap who was doing the whole demo, said, I know what you're going to do. You're going to write about this as being a phone. Well, do that if you want to. I mean, we know that Microsoft tried to get into the phone business and eventually pulled out with the Windows phone. So they're hesitant about this being called a phone, but it's Android. It's going to look like, well, something very different, something that will be reminiscent of Microsoft's design scheme. It's called Material Design. It won't look like standard Android, but that's what it'll be. It'll be standard Android, and it'll run Android apps, of which Microsoft has dozens. And it will have all the features that the Windows phone had, but obviously under Android. And the obvious benefit there is that it runs every one of the millions upon millions of Android apps too. So again, though,
why am I not excited about this?
Yeah, I mean, why are they doing this? You know, they've got Microsoft launchers. So on Android, you can, in an instant, download a launcher and set it up so that it looks very different. It looks like a Microsoft experience. It's got live tiles, things like that. So, yeah, you can kind of do that already. So I'm not sure why they're into this space.
But also,
and why is it taking so long?
I'm thinking about this from an accessibility point of view. Why do I want two screens? Please somebody explain to me why I want two screens. I mean, I have enough trouble with one. And now you're going to staple another screen to it. And I just don't. I think this is a visual thing. I think that, I mean, obviously the whole purpose of it is that you can move apps from one screen to another, and you can have two things running at the same time. I get all that, but from a blind person's perspective, why would I bother? I'll be honest with you. If they had come out with, this is the Surface Duo, it's as powerful as a PC, and it can run all your apps in the same way, but perhaps with a different skin, that would appeal, because I'll tell you something, most of the time, as I've said before on this show, my phone spends a majority of its life in my pocket, mm-hmm. and I've got a Bluetooth keyboard attached to it. If I could have a Windows PC in the same format, that would be amazing. I could do all my edits on the train, I could sit there and do what I need to do, and I would never need to have, I wouldn't even need a PC on my desk. This was all I would use. So that would appeal to me. But that's not what we're getting here. We're getting a sort of, you know, weird, I don't know, love child of Google and Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, I think that...
I just don't know if I'm impressed by this.
People that are fans of iPads, for example, where you can have a split screen, you can have two apps running at once, and, you know, you can increase your productivity in that way. Those are perhaps the sort of people that would want two screens on a phone, so that they can have two different things.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, it's easy to, on iOS, for example, swipe with four fingers between open apps and, you know, just kind of, that's almost the same as having more than one on the screen at the same time. So, yeah, I don't know. Probably not for us, primarily.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, that's it for the Surface Pro roundup, because, and I'm sorry we don't sound more excited. Well, I certainly don't sound very excited about it. I just am not particularly. I do like the sound of the new Surface Pros. I think anything basically with Intel in its name, I have an interest in. Because again, I'm thinking about it from the JAWS point of view. And again, actually, and I know some people who use ZoomText or Supernova with the Surface Pro, and they say it is amazing because the screen is so good. So for those with partial sight who really need a good screen, then the Surface Pro might be the good option for you. Maybe I should revisit it. Maybe I shouldn't be so cynical. I should spend some time with Microsoft products and see what I think. For now, though, we're going to leave it. We're going to change topic completely now. It is National Braille Week. We're going to be talking about that in a little minute. But I want to now switch over gears and talk about Braille itself. And in particular, one magazine that RNIB produces. We've got on the line Alison Long, who's back with us, joining us via Skype. And she is here to tell us all about Access IT magazine and why it is changing. Welcome back to the programme, Alison.
Good to be back.
This time we're talking about Access IT magazine, which is something which comes out regularly. I get it on RNIB Newsagent. There are people who also get it in Braille, but I believe you're changing some things. Tell us about it.
We are. We're planning to stop producing the Braille edition, with December being the last one that we publish. And the reason really behind that is the, you know, the nature of the content. This is really for people who are online and digitally engaged, as we call it. And really, we want to reach more people and we want to be able to give more information. The Braille edition restricts us both in terms of the kind of timeliness. We have to hit a deadline and it goes through production, and by the time it comes out, you know, some of the content might be a little bit old, or you've heard it somewhere else first. And it also limits the word count, because we're fixed to a number of pages we can produce in Braille. So the idea is that we can provide more content, you know, in a more timely way to more customers. At the moment, it reaches about 200 customers a month, and we know that, you know, there are literally thousands of customers who would enjoy and you know, benefit from the content that is in it.
Now, the last time I had you on, we were talking, of course, about the new RNIB talking book delivery system, essentially, what will be for the new library overtaking OverDrive. So this would obviously be part of that, I'm guessing, that this would be available through this down the line?
I mean, it will be down the line, yes, definitely in the roadmap. But in the meantime, you know, we will email it to customers. We will put it on the newsagent site. We can put it wherever we like, frankly, if it's an e-version. So we could put it on the main website. We could send it out to our Connect members. You know, it's kind of endless opportunities for customers to get hold of it.
And of course, this is great news for people who have Orbit readers, for example. You'd be able to download it in e-text and you'd be able to read that on that device and other equivalent Braille displays.
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, e-text, but we're also looking at how we increase or you know, just really produce Braille files as well. As we're producing content, you know, producing a Braille, a soft Braille edition at that point as well, as an option for customers who would prefer that.
And like you say, I mean, it gives more opportunity of choice. I don't think many people would realise that you're actually limited. I mean, that shocks me that you'd be limited to the amount of content you'd be able to put in to an actual Braille version of the book, or the magazine in this case. So, you know, being able to change that, being able to get more content out there, that can only be good.
You know, this is just about Access IT. We don't have any plans to cease production of our other hard copy Braille titles. This is really about the nature of the content rather than the format. We think it lends itself to e-text, and you know, as I've explained, the reasons why we want to stop producing the Braille, but our other Braille titles will continue. And you know, I just wanted to kind of get that out there, particularly with the recent demise of the Scottish Braille Press Braille magazine service. I know that it would concern customers if they felt that we were heading in the same direction. So I just want to reassure readers that that's not the case. In fact, you know, we want to embrace digital Braille, but you know, we're still very much in the business of producing hard copy for Braille for those customers who choose to have it. We are looking at ways to produce our library books in a different way that we think will be more appealing to more customers as well, and remove some of the kind of bulk and the logistical challenges that our kind of bound editions create, looking really at what other countries are doing to deliver their hard copy Braille library offering. So, you know, we'll be talking to customers about, you know, some of those possibilities in the near future too.
Alison Long, it's great to have you back on. And of course, we look forward to hearing you again soon here on the programme.
Great, thank you.
This is Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. It's available as a podcast, of course. Do check us out if you're not listening via podcast. Subscribe, because then you can get more talk from us whenever you want. If you can't get to sleep at night, we can help, Robin. That's our thing. Yeah, we can help people get to sleep at night. Right, let us talk about our next feature, which is, of course, Ask Tech Talk. And we love getting your questions in. You can email us at any time at techtalk@rnib.org.uk with your question, no matter how big, small, or you know, whatever you think about your question. Don't worry about it. We've heard worse, usually from us. So get in touch with your question, or you can use the hashtag AskTechTalk on Twitter. Send in your question and we will put it over to the Technology for Life team. However, and that team is here at RNIB, I'll give you the contact details a bit later. But for now, we're actually going to pitch this question to you, Robin, because I know you have the answer to this. And it comes in from Peter, who asks us about the best antivirus software that's out there. What's accessible? What works? Currently, he uses Windows Defender, and he is nervous about buying other antivirus softwares, but he's also, in his words, tight. So he doesn't want to spend any money. What should he do, Robin?
Yeah, so there's a very quick answer to this one, and that's why we haven't bothered the Tech for Life team. Don't worry, is the answer. The Windows Defender is exceptionally good, really, really good. And all of the antivirus third-party solutions that are out there will slow your computer down, will potentially cause issues with your registry and that sort of thing, because they have to work at the kernel level. So they really have to get their teeth into your operating system. And the operating system in Windows 10 in particular is more and more trying to avoid that to happen. So they have to do lots of new things, and they will slow your computer down. Now, if you don't want to pay, you mentioned that you know, you'd rather go for a free version. That's even worse, because you've got the same slowdown and you've got malware potentially, or lots of pop-up adverts and things that these free antivirus solutions include, so that they can, you know, pay the bills. So don't do it. Just the default settings in Windows 10 and in Windows 7 will update your signatures on a regular basis, and it's all fine. If you really want to up the level, you can go for an advanced protection plan with Microsoft, which is reasonably priced, but I wouldn't bother. I really wouldn't bother. That's more for IT, where they want to get reports on a regular basis and, you know, have extra admin capability. So really don't really worry. One quick tip, hotkey, Windows plus R. We all know that one. That's a really quick way to run any program. You can just type the program's name or the document's name. If you do Windows key and R and then type MRT, then it will bring up the Microsoft's malicious software removal tool. And if you really want to check whether your computer is malware free, which, you know, malware is a subcategory of viruses, then you can do a scan on that and it'll come back and tell you that, you know, you've got good health, or if not, it can try and remove them for you. So that might give you some reassurance that, hey, yeah, everything's fine. Defender's doing its thing. My computer is relatively healthy.
Okay. MRT?
Yep.
Microsoft Romeo
Removal
Tango?
Tool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike Romeo Tango.
Got you. Okay. That's a really good one. Thank you for that, Robin. Well, look, you're not going anywhere, because we have more to peel out of you, because I want to get lots of knowledge from you about Microsoft Outlook. I use Outlook every day, and I probably don't even use half of the features that it has, or indeed half of them very well. So I'm really interested in you taming Outlook.
Many people use Outlook as their main email client, and perhaps for calendars and contacts too, but it's a bit of a beast. So what I wanted to do was to help us tame it slightly by giving some top tips on how to set it up and the hotkeys I use to be productive in Outlook. So here we are in Microsoft Outlook.
Unread, attachment, Eventbrite, your tickets for digital inclusion.
So the first tip, and this is just probably a personal preference, is not to have the reading pane turned on, just to simplify the view. And the next top tip is to avoid the ribbons whenever possible by using the really handy Alt-Q hotkey.
Ribbon. Ribbon tabs tab collapsed. Type to search and use the up and down arrows keys to navigate submenu.
Alt-Q just takes you to a handy search box. So for example, if I wanted to turn on Out of Office automatic replies, you would have to dig into several layers of the options, but the easy way to do it would be to start typing AUTOM, and then if I arrow down,
menu, automatic replies, to move through items,
enter,
press up, leaving menus, automatic replies dash robin.christofferson at abilitynet.org.uk dialog, do not send automatic replies radio button checked.
And here we are in the automatic replies dialog, so you can use Alt-Q to search anything from formatting text to setting up appointments, whatever it might be, across all the Outlook functions. Another top tip, which I use a lot, is keeping track of what the status of an email is. If you're like me, you get tons of emails come in, and apart from seeing if they've been read or replied to or forwarded, you haven't a clue, unless you search in your sent items or your deleted items, what the latest status is. That's if you're like me and you haven't got a very good memory. Now, we know that we can open a note, for example. That's Control-Shift-N.
Untitled-Note. No text edit. Type in text for the note.
Now, that will allow you to write a note, and that will get saved in the notes section. But you can't easily associate that note with an email. They're just notes. So that's no good. I'll hit Escape.
Outlook-Edit.
What we need to do is somehow add a note to an email. Now, there's not an official way of doing that, but I've found a way around it. We all know what Shift-F10 is.
Menu. To move through items, press up or down arrow. Quick print. Q.
This brings up the menu, the submenu of items that you can do on that email. If I go to follow-up, which is U.
Today, not checked. T.
In here, there are lots of flags that you can set about when you want to action this particular item, but they just put a flag and it just says flag. But if I hit C for custom.
Leaving menus. Flag to edit combo. Follow up. To set the value, use the arrow keys or type the value. Alt plus F.
So now you can type in this text box something to do with the note.
I replied to him on September 3rd.
Enter. Now, if I read that mail.
Red flag, unread, attachment, Eventbrite, your tickets for...
So there you go. It now says red flag next to it. Now that's not helpful, but we know that if we do Shift F10, U and then C, then we can quickly read that note. Let's do that.
Combo box custom. I replied to him on September 3rd.
There you go. The next thing we'll look at are really useful hotkeys for moving around in folders. So Control Y.
Go to folder dialog. Tree.
And we're in a tree view here, and I can just arrow up and down.
Drafts. Sent items.
So Control Y is your friend when it comes to moving through folders. You probably knew that one. You can just hit enter now to go to a different folder, but I'll hit escape.
Outlook dash.
If you want to move an email to another folder, it's Control Shift V.
Move items dialog, tree view, inbox.
And you would just hit enter on the folder you wanted to move the email to. That had focus when you did that hotkey. Now I often have to set up appointments that are either just for me or that have other attendees too. Now I'm not in the calendar view, but you don't need to be, but Control Shift A.
Untitled dash appointment, title edit, type in text.
We all know what the appointment dialog looks like, and that's the quick way to bring it up. If I hit escape.
Outlook dash.
Control Shift Q.
Untitled dash meeting. Title edit. Type in text. Alt plus L.
Is exactly the same dialogue, but now if I tab.
Required edit. Type in text.
Required. So that's where you can put in other attendees' email addresses. Now let's quickly look at switching between, for example, email and your calendar. So your email is Control 1. We happen to be on the inbox, so that won't do anything at the moment. Control 2.
Dayview, 11 total events, 1 p.m. to 1.
So here we are in the calendar, and it said Dayview there. Now that's my preferred view to view the calendar from the keyboard. You can now hit right or left arrow.
1 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, 1 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Thursday, September. 8 total events, 1 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Friday, September.
Now it's just after 1 o'clock, which is why it keeps jumping to that section of the diary each day, but I was just arrowing right through the different days there. And tab, if I hit tab now.
My HR training, 9 a.m. to 9:30 a.m.
will jump you to the next item on that day. So you can move through all the items on that day with tab and shift tab. If you want to go back to the current day, because we've moved away from it, if I do Control T.
10 total events, 9 a.m. to 9.
That's moved us back to today. Control G will take us.
Go to date, date colon, date.
To a go to date dialogue, and so you can just type in a day there, like 11/11/19, for example. I'll just finish off with two other preferences that I have that I think are quite important. If you go into the options, you can choose to have Control Enter for send. And for whatever reason, I really like being able to send a message that I've just drafted with Control Enter, and also to choose comma to separate email addresses. I find that really useful too. When you're typing in email addresses in an email or in an appointment, then you can just use comma to separate them. And we all know that tab will autocomplete emails that you've started to type, and arrowing up and down will go through emails that start with the letters that you started to type the email address with. So yeah. So there you go. Just some random hotkeys that I find really useful trying to tame Outlook. Good luck with it, and back to the studio.
Thank you, Robin. A really interesting review there of how to tame the lion that is Outlook. I cannot wait to get into some of those settings later and check all that out. Robin, thank you so much for that. Look, before we go, I just want to quickly mention National Braille Week, of course. I was thinking about this. We should probably do another show at some point soon around the tech that's available, but I just want to mention quickly about some of the things that are going on. So obviously the Orbit Reader is out, and I think, you know, a lot of people who don't know about the Orbit Reader yet should check this out. Also with RNIB and Victa, the blind charity, it is maybe worth mentioning if you are under the age of 28, I think that's around 28. I might be slightly out with that one, but I'm sure it's 20 or 25 or 28. Check on the website. You can apply for a grant that would give you access to a to money to buy an Orbit Reader, which is really worth doing. Also, there are so many other devices out there right now, and you know, there's just so much going on in the world of Braille. But one thing I didn't use much at the beginning, I knew about it. And after learning Braille, I thought it might be worth trying out more recently. And that is Braille screen input on the iPhone. And for quick notes, just for taking quick notes, I find it much easier because I can. I mean, and actually on an iPad, it's amazing because you've got such a bigger screen to use. I mean, it's not. I don't know if it's the reason to buy an iPad for a blind person, but if you have an iPad, it's certainly worth trying it, because it essentially gives you a keyboard on the screen that you can use. And what's brilliant is you don't have to have your fingers in a certain location. It will kind of work itself out. So it's a really nice piece of kit. Do check it out. Braille screen input, if it's not available in your rotor when you're using an iPhone or using an iPad, you can enable it by going to the rotor settings under VoiceOver on the accessibility settings on the iPhone, but certainly worth mentioning. So if, even if you don't have the money to go out and buy yourself a Braille display, that is something you can still enjoy if you've got an iPhone. And there are equivalents. I think there's an equivalent on Android, but Braille nobody back. Likes to talk about it. Yeah, Braille back. No one likes it, though, from
what
I
understand. No, it's not great.
No. So there you go. Anyway, just wanted to mention that. It is National Braille Week. Thank you to Alison Long, of course, for coming on and telling us about Access IT, also allaying some of those fears that some of you may have around RNIB pulling out of the Braille business. In fact, it seems quite the opposite. What does seem to be happening from my point of view anyway, from what I'm hearing from Alison and the team, is that the push is towards digital Braille. And I think this is fantastic. This is the way to do it. Because, if, you know, the one thing that will keep Braille alive in some respects is the technology. The idea of the postman turning up, you know, with a massive bag full of Braille for you, it just seems a bit antiquated and old. And, you know, it would be, I suppose it's like the book thing, you know. Well, you can buy a book, yes, but actually, wouldn't it just be easier to download it to your device and read it that way? So I think when it comes to Braille, especially considering the size and the volumes, so I'm all for this. But, you know, share your views on this. If you disagree, if you think, no, I want hard copy Braille, I'm annoyed about this, or, you know, I think we need to get back to that, then we should talk about it. Because let's be honest, Braille embossers aren't cheap. Running them is even less cheap. So it's a challenge, you know. So anyway, get in touch, tell us your thoughts. Always keen to hear them. Coming up next week, we are going to be talking about all kinds of stuff, including accessible smart TVs, and really digging into how the new Fire TV will work. Not the Fire TV stick, but the Fire TV itself. More on that coming up next week. Robin, thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks. Brilliant.